You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Caught me playing with Aspen here. Hope everyone's having a good day. I want to just take a moment first and send some prayers and thoughts out to associates and colleagues and friends that I have who live in Texas. Been talking with them the last 24 hours, and one of them got power back on this morning. Another one, they still day four, no power, no water. So just sending thoughts and prayers out to all of you out there, and certainly hope that you can get warm soon. That being said, I have a guest today, Chris Krueger, who is a financial advisor. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Chris works with Edward Jones, and he works with individuals and businesses. And he also does all of the financial advisor training for the west side of Denver. And Chris, why don't you say good morning and just share a little bit about yourself with our guests this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you again for having me. As you said, I've been with Edward Jones about 6 years. Prior to that, I was doing financial analytics for large companies, Fortune 500 companies. So I would go in and problem solve those companies, help them become more efficient. Then we decided to have kids and I couldn't travel for 6 weeks at a time. So I planted some roots in the Denver area, and basically I do the same thing for individuals. I just work with them and kind of dances together, and, you know, it feels a little bit more rewarding than, the big corporations of making a difference in someone's life. So,
and yeah. You grew up in Iowa, is that correct?
I did. I grew up in a little town called George. It was about 1,000 people. Grew up in my parents' office supply business, did some farm work as well because there's really no other work there. And then after Iowa, I moved down to Arizona, went to Arizona State. I kind of worked through college there and banking, and then made the transition to the financial analytics side. Yep.
Well, I know that your business philosophy really circles around helping people. And I reached out, and I have quite a few questions that were submitted for today. So I'm going to just start off with the first question, and then you just go for it.
Perfect.
So the first question that was submitted is, at what age should I start retirement planning? And this question was actually submitted by a college student who's 23. And he said that he was aware that his parents didn't start planning their retirement till they were in their 50s. And he's thinking that's too late. So that was his question.
Perfect. Well, quite honestly, you know, we could probably talk about this one question for the whole time. But I think everyone expects the answer of as soon as possible, right? But if you think about the question, it's when do you start financial planning versus when do you start investing? And I think that's key in the sense of planning is very important in the sense of, you know, anxiety, especially with finances, comes from one of two places. It either comes from a lack of feeling in control or a lack of information. So planning is really identifying that, and it's different for everyone. But as soon as you start that planning process, you start to feel a little bit more in control. You have a path. And quite honestly, the people that I tend to meet with, I'd say about 95% of people are overly pessimistic about their situation.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, right? So it's good job security for me. I'm not going to be out washing cars for a living anytime soon. But no, I think the planning piece is more of understanding where you're at in life, prioritizing for, you know, early 20s in college. That's going to be a little bit different. That's going to be understanding, how do I balance debt with these other things I'm saving for? You know, when I get my first 401k, what's the best way to use that? You know, what's the difference between pre-tax and Roth? And it's really understanding your priorities. And that's the whole purpose of planning, is understanding what's most important to you and then working yourself backwards to saying, am I doing the right things based off of where my priorities are? Because if I ask a 23-year-old in college, hey, what are your top five financial priorities? Chances are they're not going to mention retirement.
I was going to say, I had no clue that that was even something important when I was that age.
Oh, absolutely. And in the sense of, you know, that person's parents, yeah, a lot of people start planning at 50, but chances are they started saving a little before that. You know, and people need to be careful. Everyone wishes they would have started earlier. Everyone feels like they're behind. I've yet to meet someone that feels like they have enough saved. I haven't met one person yet.
Wow.
Right? And so what 50-year-olds that maybe feel like they're later to the game, what they need to avoid feeling is that they have to catch up. Because if they feel if they have to catch up, they may not take the appropriate level of risk and then make some mistakes that would be counterproductive as well.
Yep. That's good. That's good information. The next question is, can a financial advisor help me with estate planning? This actually came from an older gentleman who is 70.
Yeah. That's when I really started thinking about estate planning seriously. Right? I don't think the 23-year-old is thinking about putting a wall out there. But no, so short answer is yes. But really the capacity that I work with within estate planning is more of partnering with an estate planner, which is typically an estate attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to be in the room with those conversations because I can quite honestly ask questions that maybe that person didn't think of, right? And it's really, you think of estate planning, it's you know, if you don't have an estate plan, then the state is going to have a plan for you, right? So I think you'd much rather make those decisions than having the state decide for you. And then we can talk about things once we understand your family dynamic of, you know, these aren't real fun topics to talk about, but what happens when you pass? What organizations do you like to support? Moreover, you know, maybe I have one of my children that's in a marriage that I'm not real sure of, and I want to make sure that when I do my estate planning, my assets stay with, you know, my child. And if something did happen and they split, you know, no one wishes for that, but I want to make sure that those assets stay, you know, with my child, maybe my future grandchildren. You know, you can put restrictions on there. It has to be used for these specific purposes or at this age. So it's really understanding what do you want your finances to do after you're no longer here to make those decisions.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to think about. Yeah, during that time.
Yeah.
Which kind of feeds into the next question. Also, can a financial advisor help me with tax planning?
Yeah. Same kind of short answer. Yes. Except, right. You know, we're not accountants. I don't want you to bring me a shoebox of receipts. Right? That's really not my job in that capacity.
Hopefully people aren't still doing that.
I hope not. But no, I mean, I talk with people, CPAs, throughout the year. Hey, this is where we're at this year. These are some of the things that we did. You know, these may be some, you know, strategies we want to talk about. You know, with small business owners, that's that much more important as to, hey, you know, how can we get some deductions for the business? How can we pay the business owner some more with, you know, potentially getting around some taxes like self-employment tax, things like that. You know, and that's really what's the most fun to me is those complex cases of, hey, you know, let's think through this. Let's get creative. But I think the most important thing is that your financial advisor and your CPA, your estate planning attorney, you know, your health insurance representative, we all talk and we all work as one team. And that's what I typically like to achieve is I talk to all those people in regards to my client to make sure we're looking at it from every perspective.
Yeah, that's great that all those connections are made because that's something I just learned that all those connections are important.
Yeah, and furthermore, you know, my perspective and the way I view my business is, look, you know, I'm going to manage your investments as well as I can. And if we can increase your rate of return by 1%, something like that, which we cannot guarantee, I'm not saying that we can do, but what we can do is find some pretty substantial savings with some tailored tax strategies that may help you reduce how much you pay and kind of structure how you save your money and do things like that. So
that's good information. Yep. So the next question is, can I access cash right away in an emergency? And this actually came from a neighbor who's watching. Hi. And you know, with this COVID situation, getting laid off, you know, potentially thinking, do I need to sell my home because I'm worried about that? You know, how is it that somebody could access cash if they needed to out of their retirement or investment funds?
Yeah, great question, because this is one of the big misconceptions. And one of the things you said, I just want to take a quick detour as to, you know, some of the value of a financial advisor. So as we went through the pandemic, we had a bunch of legislation changes in terms of tax law, in terms of IRAs, contributions, required minimum distributions. One thing that a lot of people didn't know is that in the year of 2020, you could actually take out of your IRA and they waived that early distribution penalty. So a lot of people that were struggling, we were able to, you know, work with their CPA, decide if it was right for them. And a lot of people could take up to $100,000. They could actually amortize that over 3 years so that they're not taking a big tax hit in that first year, right? But this is the importance of having people that you can rely on is, as you go through adversity and changes, you know, we may know some things that would help you through times like that. But the original question is, you know, when can I access it in terms of an emergency? You know, the way I view risk and a lot of things I do for folks is I like to have 2 years of expected expenses plus your emergency fund, basically not invested. And if you need some of that money, really it's, hey, Chris, I had my furnace go out. I need $10,000. Great. It can be to you typically within one business day into your checking account. If they have some invested balances, hey, maybe we want to go buy a rental property, right? Maybe we have that in a more conservative portfolio if we were planning on it. Hey, Chris, we need $100,000 for a down payment. Great. I hope it's a nice house. Tell me about it. Oh, by the way, it's going to be in your checking account as cash, typically in 2 to 3 business days. So access is liquid. Even with IRAs, depending on age, the only sometimes tricky parts is if you have some type of insurance product or a CD or something that has specific terms on it that would prevent you from taking that out without penalty. Yep.
Okay. Next question is, can I see my accounts online at any time? I mean, I would assume with technology now that people can, but the person who submitted this question said that they don't have that access. And so they were wondering, is that standard procedure? Why is that not happening? How, you know, I was a little surprised that it wasn't online. Everything's online.
I would say it is rare that you can't check that online. Even if you go with independent agents or things like that, they usually use some back end technology where you can sign in like you would with your online banking, be able to check the accounts. You know, like with the case of Edward Jones, you can check it on your laptop. You can see real time updates. So you can literally see your values move as the market is fluctuating.
Yeah, I do know
if this is a good thing. I think we'd have to increase the amount of spending on antacids if you really want to do that. Right? No, you can check it real time, iPhone, iPad, tablet, device, seeing it in real time. It's just, you know, everyone likes to do it a little bit different, right? And so a lot of people I see, even younger people, they'll tend to get their paper statements monthly, and then they still have their online access. So if they want to go in and get more detail, otherwise if it's out of sight, out of mind, then they may not check it. But I also make it standard practice to where I try and call and update clients every 2 or 3 months. Hey, here's what the market's doing. Here's what your account's doing. Is there anything different with your financial situation or how you feel about risk? This is what we need to adjust around. So I think those kind of 3 different ways that they can view it or hear about it, they usually stay pretty well informed.
Okay. Next question was, does my financial advisor need to live close to me? What if I move? And this also came from the same person who's a neighbor, because she's thinking she actually may move out of state to some place that's less expensive to live than here. And can the person that she's working with here you know, still support her if she was to, you know, move to Boston?
Yeah. Short answer, yes. Right. And I think over this past year, you know, most advisors adopted kind of the Zoom calls, the different virtual meetings. You know, I have clients right now in I think over 20 states.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some of which I've never met in person, but, you know, being able to see and interact, you know, I do think it's important to see the body language, right? Because you'll pick up on those subtle details.
Well, now we're able to do that with technology.
Right, right. And so, you know, it's really, can you have that relationship with your advisor and will that maintain that level of trust that you're working with a person that has your best interests in mind?
Okay.
Right. But I, you know, I can say some people like it, some people don't, but I've had plenty of people move and I still work with them. Yep.
Okay. How many clients do most financial advisors have? This actually came from a younger person in their 30s who's just getting ready to take their first job. You were talking earlier about your first 401k and things like that. And their concern is that they're going to end up just being a number on somebody's desk and that personal connection that you talked about isn't going to be there. And for them, they said that that was going to be really important.
Yeah. And you know, I think that is very important. I think, you know, companies are always trying to see, okay, how can we grow our business without, you know, needing more people, right? So I think what we have seen is that a lot of companies are taking on more clients and then you do kind of become a number on a desk sometimes. You know, just know that you don't have to stay in that relationship. If you value a personal connection and personal coaching, you kind of have to go seek that out. And I would say it depends on the financial advisor. You know, some that are maybe closer to retiring, that they've been in the business for 20 years, they only have to be at a larger company and they do more over the phone, things like that. They may have a couple thousand.
Wow.
Right. For me, I typically like to keep about 200 to 300 families. And I think that gives me plenty of time to, you know, do things like this, right, to coach other advisors. But really that allows me the bandwidth to give a really high level of service to where I can talk to their CPAs. I can talk to their attorneys. I can respond to their call when they call and I call them back next day. You know, you give that, for me, it's more about how high of a level of service can I give with the time that I have. And that's what I found is kind of my sweet spot.
Okay. Yep. And how much does it cost to have a financial advisor? You know, that was a question that came up. Again, somebody brand new, just kind of looking into this for the first time, not quite sure, you know, how all these different fees and things work and, you know, are concerned about where their money's going to be spent.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one thing that's one of the most important topics you can have besides, is it a good fit with a financial advisor? You know, and
that's a good question to ask them.
Oh yeah. You need to ask that right away. I mean, okay. Honestly, when I talk to someone for the first time, I talk about it in the first 5 minutes because I know they're probably hesitant to ask it. And if I talk about it right away, they're like, okay, now we can kind of continue with our conversation because I'm not sitting there waiting for a good time to ask that question. Right.
So okay, to fit it in the conversation,
or, you know, see, you know, is this going to be a bait and switch? Because everyone's fear is that they're going to go through this long process, provide all of this information, spend a few hours of their time, go through all this work. And then at the end, that person's going to try and sell them life insurance. Mm. Right. I hear that all the time. Right. So just understanding, hey, what are we trying to accomplish here? But I would say from the cost standpoint, myself, I can even do it about 3 or 4 different ways, right? And I can go and say, okay, what's the best option for you? What's the most cost-efficient option? But a lot of advisors may charge by their time, right? They may charge. Oh, really? Yeah, so much like an attorney, right? To where, if you call and ask a question, right? I mean, they're going to log some hours there, right? They can charge based off the balance. So you can pay a percentage based off the invested balance. And you can also pay per transaction. If you go buy one share, you know, of company ABC, you may pay a fee to buy and sell it, right? So it's important for you to understand what the different options are. I always kind of tailor that to my clients to where it's like, hey, this is how I think you want to operate. These are the different options. Let's kind of build out your structure for you to where it's the most efficient. And then that way they understand, I understand, they understand that I'm working in their best interest. Yep.
So this next question, I actually had to look it up because I didn't know what it meant. So I guess I'm still learning. It says, how often are my investments being rebalanced? And this is from somebody who's looking to change their financial advisor. Yeah. And I went, oh, that sounds like a good question. I need to know what that means.
Yeah. The question is, if you don't know, chances are it's not being rebalanced. Right, which means that no one is making adjustments with the market.
Okay.
That may not be the case. Sometimes you can put it into a program, it'll automatically rebalance. Right. But if you don't know, ask the question, you know, look at statements. If you look at the statement activity and you see, well, I've had the same investment for 6 years, chances are that hasn't been rebalanced.
Okay. Right? So what does rebalanced mean? Chris.
Yeah, rebalance. So let's say, for example, we had a lot of changes in the market last year and you had a lot of growth on your stock. And now the stock is a large part of your portfolio. And that may be more risk than what you want to see. So rebalancing is, hey, let's take some of these investments, right? Let's take some of that growth, make your percentage lower, and let's put that over into these other categories to get your risk back to where you want it to be. Because you're value of investments are constantly changing. Rebalancing is just going and kind of redoing it to a certain degree and putting it kind of in the slices of the pie that best okay. what you want to do.
Okay.
Yep. But every financial advisor is different. Like I'm pretty active in terms of the amount of changes that I make. Some will just say, I want to look at it once a year and I'll rebalance it for that client. Some just say, hey, let's put it here and let's just let it grow for 5 or 6 years. So you kind of have to iron out that expectation with your financial advisor of, hey, what's your investment philosophy? Does it align with mine? And is that what I want to do?
Okay. Yep.
So,
how often should I meet with my financial advisor? And I think you've touched on that, you know, a little bit. Some people that I talk to said, I talk to my person 15 minutes once a year at tax time, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I use the rule of thumb of, you know, if you have any uncertainty, if you have any questions, especially if you have any anxiety, I want you to call me right away, right? I don't want you to lose sleep, right? And I usually train people to where, hey, if you're laying in bed kind of curious or anxious about your funds, just imagine my kind of mumbled monotone voice in the back of your head. Says, look, we have it covered, everything, you know, we planned for this. But I think it's a relationship, right? I mean, you almost have to view it as a friendship. And so I always want people to call if they have questions, right? I mean, I talk with people about refinancing their houses, about, hey, I'm going to buy a new car. Do I need to think about anything? Hey, these student loans, what does this mean? So it's just conversations about money. And the more I talk with someone, the better I know them and understand what's most important to them. So as often as you need to, if you're not getting the right kind of communication, tell your financial advisor that. And if they don't change, then you kind of need to assess that.
Okay. So this next question actually came from a young lady who lives in the neighborhood. She assists me with dog walking. She is 18. She's graduating high school this year. Her parents made her start a savings account when she was 12.
Okay.
You know, and so she's going to buy her first car as she goes off to college. But her question is, should I be saving money or spending money? And so, you know, she's questioning, like, am I too young to really start doing some financial planning? Should I just put some money in a savings account? Or am I young enough that I can actually be spending money and not have to worry about it right now?
Yeah. I always say it's a blend, right? And, you know, I tend to meet with clients at the age of 10.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Because
I mean, that person.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to be doing this for a while. So it's good to have some 10-year-olds in your business. Right. But, no, I think, what's important is to understand the impact of savings, but don't sacrifice everything to save every penny that you make, right? And going back to the first question, that's the whole purpose of planning is once you get a better picture as to what the future looks like, and maybe you're over-saving. I have a lot of people that were over-saving. You can kind of right-size that. Mia, she's, you know, young, right? She's 18. She probably wants a car.
Yeah, right? She's trying to figure out, should she buy a new car or a used car? Like, how much should I actually spend out of my savings? Yeah.
Yeah. And that depends on the person, right? You know, it's hard to give that individual advice without knowing kind of like her personal tendencies.
I think it's more of a parent thing with her. They're not wanting her to spend as much as she wants to spend, but they're letting her make her own choice.
Yeah. And I think most parents would say that about their teenagers.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's typically a blend. It's, you know, be responsible with the car purchase, understand the value of your savings. You know, one thing that I instill in younger, you know, kids or clients is that, you know, if you look at what your monthly savings habit is over a 30-year period, and if you averaged 6% growth per year, all you do is you take your monthly savings habit, you can add 3 zeros onto the end of that. So if you have a, you know, an 18-year-old that's saving $100 a month, you know, 30 years from now when they're 48, that $100 a month will really be $100,000, right? If it follows those trends.
Right.
And then also understanding, you know, invested balances, a good rule of thumb, the rule of 72 is portfolios should double every about 7 to 10 years, depending on the level of risk that you're taking.
Okay.
So having them understanding compound, the time value of money, that usually gets them more excited about the savings that they are doing versus I'm doing it because my parents had.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Some friends of mine who are going to be getting married. And they're in their 30s and don't have a financial advisor yet, but they figure now that we're getting married, we want to start a family, probably buy our first home. Should they each have a different financial advisor? Should they have the same financial advisor? They've always kept their assets separate. They've been together for almost 10 years and have kept everything separate. And now they're thinking, now do we blend everything? Do we go with the same person?
Yeah.
Concept.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that they're going to want to come to an agreement on together. But I do it in different avenues. And so everyone wants to do it different. I have married couples that they both have their own separate plan. They both have their own separate accounts. They really don't commingle at all. I also have married couples that they both have separate accounts, but we actually make the plan together.
Okay.
Their assets together, but at least they can kind of understand how both are working together. You know, if you have a different advisor for each person, maybe that's because, you know, one person likes that advisor, the other one doesn't. That's completely fine. Yeah. Right? You see that all the time. But what I would do is just make sure that both advisors in that situation know the full picture, what you're working towards and all the different pieces of both the plans. But, you know, the typical person I have usually has maybe 3 or 4 different financial plans just because we tend to work through different scenarios. So same thing with married couples. Maybe they try it out this way. If they don't like how that works, they can go this way. So nothing's written in stone.
Okay. What happens along the way then when circumstances change? This was actually asked by the same couple. What if one of them loses their job, or what if they do then buy a house, or yes, they're getting married, but then what if they get divorced, or what if they relocate to another state? So all of the, I guess, yeah, and I'd actually put in there, you know, what happens when we have children? You know, what happens if you're working with your financial advisor and then you truly have a major life change, or, you know, either it's a planned life change or it's an unplanned life change?
Yeah. I mean, that's the fun part about the job, right? If we built a financial plan and it was 100% accurate, you know, that really wouldn't be that interesting, right? We'd be looking at the same thing every time, you know, and that's why we have, you know, computer programs instead of etching it into granite, is because inevitably something is going to change. You know, we can, you know, the first risk I like to look at is, hey, if everything goes as planned, are we going to outlive our money? And then what you do is you can make different versions of that plan of, look, like, you know, what if one of us were to pass early? What does life look like for that other person? Hey, what happens if we do get divorced? What would happen with the assets then? You know, if we buy a house, what's our options with that? How do we best prepare to generate this down payment for a house? What does that mean from a tax standpoint? What are all these things that maybe we aren't thinking of that we need to be? And you never know what you don't know.
Right.
Right. And so really it comes, you know, I had an appointment last week with someone where, hey, surprise, she quit her job. And we haven't been able to sleep for a couple of days. I'm like, well, you should have called me a couple of days ago, but that's fine. Let's go in. And, you know, we reworked the plan because it shook their confidence.
Of course.
Are we making a mistake? And long term, it really didn't have the negative impact that they built up in their mind. So once you can kind of work through those scenarios one by one, that gives you a lot of peace because, again, anxiety comes from lack of information or a lack of control. If you feel like you have the information and you can control that situation, you're typically going to be okay saying, okay, we talked about it, we addressed it, we understand the risk, we can either cover that risk or not, but that's how you systematically go through and talk about risk.
Okay. Something that you and I've talked about, you know, before too, and I've had friends who are talking about it or who are doing it. I mean, my guest who's going to be on the show next week is actually retired in Ecuador. You know, what happens if somebody decides come retirement they want to move to, you know, another country? Can their advisor still work with them? How does it change? You know, I mean, cost of living tends to be less in these foreign countries. So your money goes further, which is one of the main reasons that people are choosing to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it depends on the country. It depends on, you know, finances, how long after half the year they're in, you know, Canada, Europe, or India, you know, and they kind of have finances in both countries.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas one has everything here, and he has a bank account to where, you know, we give him his monthly direct deposit and you can put that in the Canadian bank account, pay the exchange rate and use it there. So really depends on the country, how they do their, you know, taxes, everything like that. You know, it may add just a little layer of complexity, but yeah, you can still keep your financial advisor for the most part living in a different country.
Okay. Right?
I don't know about like Cuba or things like that, but you know, it really depends on the country, their laws.
Aruba.
What's that?
Aruba.
Okay, yeah. So it depends, right? It's case by case, but yeah. More often than not, I'd say, yeah, you can maintain your relationship and live abroad.
Well, and I'm assuming that's a conversation you would have before you just pack your bags and go out the door. So
yeah, and I tend to like to research those things. So, you know, because then I can still get
a plane. Hey, by the way.
Yeah. I am calling from Mexico, just so I'd let you know. So, you know, you can typically make that work. It's just a matter of making sure it's convenient. You can access your money.
So. Okay. So in the research that my little 18-year-old neighbor, she's actually, you know, pretty sharp. She wanted to know, would you explain what a fiduciary financial advisor is?
Yeah.
So she was looking around on the internet. She said, sometimes I would see that and sometimes I wouldn't. And what does that mean?
Yeah. And that's a question I get a lot because that's somewhat relatively new in terms of the commonality of that question. So a fiduciary financial advisor is just kind of simply the way I explain it is it's a financial advisor that has to legally act in your best interest. And so I can't do something that is in my best interest and not yours. It always has to be in your best interest. So with that, it comes a lot of documentation, understanding where you are, kind of understanding your risk tolerance, documenting that. There's a lot of restrictions too. Like I wouldn't be able to take 100% of your net worth and put it in GameStop.
Oh, why not?
I know. It may make you a lot of money. But, you know. So you have to take on this different level of responsibility to do what's best for that person. You know, an analogy that I use is, like, if you go to a doctor for a knee surgery and they operate on the wrong knee, you could pursue that doctor legally, right? Same thing with a fiduciary. If they're not acting in your best interest, you can pursue them legally.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So it's there for the client's protection.
Okay.
Yep.
What is your opinion of Roth IRAs?
Oh, I love them.
Okay. Because?
Yeah. I think, you know, the biggest benefits are in the details. So if you're 3 years out from retirement, it may not be the best fit for you, but it's an excellent tool in the sense of, like, with your 18-year-old neighbor, you know, the biggest benefit is, you know, with a Roth IRA, you can save in there. You're going to pay tax on that money. So you have to pay tax on it. You save in that account. And when that account grows, the growth is tax-free. So you don't pay any taxes on interest and dividends. The growth has to stay in there until retirement age. But when you save into the Roth, you can actually take out your contributions, the money that you put in, and use it without tax or penalty.
Okay.
So if I have a late 20s, early 30s client, and maybe they want to upgrade their house in 5 years, you know, I'll have them save into a Roth IRA. Maybe they won't need it, but what we're doing is we're generating capital and flexibility in their finances to where if they find that house and they need an extra $20,000 or $50,000 and they don't have enough saved in their savings, we can take it out of the Roth without tax implication to help them go get that house. Right? So it just builds in flexibility. For retirees, I think it's a great tool to help manage taxable income. You know, if you retire before 65, you have to go to open market for health insurance. A lot of open market health insurance, and it's dependent upon your county and your state.
Yes, and it's really expensive.
It can be, right? What's important to understand is how they judge the premiums on that health insurance, which
by income, right?
A lot of times it's by your taxable income. Yeah. So let's say if you retire and you want to go take your dream trip, travel around the world, it's going to be $100,000, but you've had everything saved in a 401k or pre-tax dollars. If you take out that $100,000, that's all taxable income. It's not going to be fun from a tax perspective.
Right.
But in retirement, if you need to spend that $100,000, you know, we can take X amount out of pre-tax dollars. That's going to show as taxable income. And we can supplement that with a Roth IRA to give you the $100,000, but maybe your taxable income is only $50,000. And that's going to keep you under the income threshold for health insurance, which may save you anywhere from $5,000 to $12,000 a year in health insurance premiums. So the Roth IRA is just the flexibility that it gives how you can take out your money and still control your taxes. That is the key to using a Roth IRA.
Okay.
Another detail, sorry, I don't want to spend all.
No, go ahead.
But that's why I say I love Roth IRAs. I could talk about for an hour. Right?
Come back and talk just about that.
Exactly. So one detail that's important is that you need to have a Roth IRA open for 5 years before you can take out the gains and the interest.
Huh.
Right? So if you're 63 and you retire at 64 and you open up your first Roth IRA and you end up putting some funds in there, that's got to be open for 5 years before you can take the growth out tax-free. Otherwise, there may be a little penalty on that.
Okay.
So a lot of times people will open up a Roth IRA just to start that timer.
I got a question. You know, what should I expect when working with a financial advisor? And I think you touched on that, you know, a little bit as well. People are just trying to figure out, you know, what kind of relationship should I have with this person? And of course, I know that it's personality dependent. Some people, they're fine not talking to or being with or being around anybody for long periods of time. And other people might be calling you every single day. you know, what are some of the benefits and differences, you know, in working with you?
Yeah, it's just having someone that you trust, right? And that's why choosing a financial advisor is really important. That's why I typically tell people, look, I understand that your friend told you about me. I would prefer that you go talk to a couple more just so you can see the differences. And then if you still choose me, our relationship's going to be that much stronger because you know what other options you had. But in terms of expectations, you know, if you've never worked with one, it may be hard to understand. And you just really don't know how it works. You may think it's like a CPA where you just give them some documents, you talk to them once a year to pay them and make sure your taxes are filed, right? Whereas, and some advisors work like that. You know, I have clients that they're like, look, if you call me more than once every 6 months, I view that as harassment.
Oh, my God.
You know? I'm like, okay, I got it. I'll make a note. I won't bother you. But if something comes up, you have to call me.
Right.
Whereas most often I do contact them really regularly. Hey, what's going on? I'll ask some questions because just in having conversations, you tend to pick up quite a bit. You know, I had a conversation yesterday with someone to where we weren't talking about taxes, but the issue came up because it's tax time. And they're like, yeah, you know, I had to pay taxes on that rollover that we did. I'm like, no, you didn't. And he's, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, that wasn't a taxable event. So we talked to the CPA. There was a data entry error. They corrected it, and it saved them a couple $1,000s.
Wow.
And, you know, that was just from conversation. It wasn't the point of the call.
Right.
But that's the point of, hey, just kind of talking through and working with someone pretty close.
Okay. Another question that came up, if you weren't a financial advisor, what else would you be doing?
Yeah, that's good. I have the ability, maybe a professional golfer, but that's gone. Oh. Yeah, I don't have enough hair to do any type of modeling. quite honestly, I'd probably be a counselor of some sort. The data analytics piece I did like. I would probably just do it in a little bit different fashion. Maybe I didn't have to travel, but I honestly don't know what else I would be doing. I love, you know, talking about this stuff. Everyone's stressed about it. I have great job security because it's, you know, pretty complicated at times. So, I mean, if I wasn't doing that, you know, I don't know. Hopefully not washing cars.
So golfing is something that you enjoy doing.
Yeah, I mean, when I have time. Two little kids, I don't play it near as enough, but that's what everyone says.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I want to make sure that people, you know, also know how to reach out to you, Chris, and be able to ask you more questions and talk to you personally one-on-one. What's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, email is always good. You know, email is just chris.kruger@edwardjones.com.
Okay.
I tend to respond to emails off hours, right? I spend the day kind of talking to clients and doing that. So if I have some downtime, I typically do email when the market's not open, things like that. They can always call, that's 303-989-5282. You can find me on a website, social media, it's pretty easy to access. I mean, obviously, I love talking about this stuff. And I love helping people. So the more questions you have, the better. And if I get overwhelmed, which I challenge you to do that because I'm pretty efficient, then I have plenty of advisors in the area that I have great relationships with. And we'll just tackle it as a team. So,
oh, that's really cool. Yeah. Has that happened before where you've had something like that happen?
Yeah, so I have a couple of partner financial advisors that, you know, I'll tend to – if my business gets large to where if I see a service kind of, if I get a little too busy, then I'll have a partner financial advisor that'll help me with some of it. And I'm more of a consultant to that financial advisor and, help with more complex issues. But that way, we're sure everyone gets that personal service, that personal relationship, everything that they're expecting. And then if there's complex stuff that maybe they want to refer to me on, I'd step in. I love that stuff. So, yeah, and it's kind of sharing the wealth. So, but yeah, bring on the questions. I can't, this is what I do. This is what I love. So,
well, somebody else also submitted a question that said they know that a lot of tax laws have happened, in the last years. Do financial advisors also have laws that change as well, just like tax laws that affect what they're doing?
Yeah, almost every year. Actually.
Oh, every year.
So, yeah, we had the Department of Labor, I think, maybe 3 years or so ago to where they're, is going to kind of revamp the entire industry and go to more of that fiduciary standard. That's why that became such a popular term, right? And Edward Jones, as a company, decided to maintain that fiduciary standard and have the capacity to do so, but they actually appealed that law. And so they went in, we changed everything, and then they basically decided not to do it. Right. So that was a good about 16 months of really solid work. And then they kind of backed out of it. But now they just did what's called the best interest contract.
What's that mean?
It's just some new regulations and things like that. It's really because a lot of people honestly are scared of financial advisors because there's a lot of advisors.
So scary. Yeah.
I'm super scary, right? But a lot of advisors, you know, they don't necessarily act in the best interest of a client, right? And so I go to great lengths for people to understand my conflicts of interest, to prove to them I'm acting in their best interest. But not everyone has to do that. And so what that regulation did is it just tried to kind of set a higher standard. Right. Just a higher standard of care. So less people got abused. Right. You hear bad stories all the time. That's why trust is so key, is to find someone that you trust and that can show you how they're doing what's best for you versus what's best for them. Right. Churning, creating fees, things like that. All that stuff that would be counterproductive.
OK. But
yeah. Regulations happen all the time. Typically updates come every year. So we get to watch all of those great continuing education videos and take the quizzes and.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So it's constant learning for you as well, and updates also.
Yeah, which I love, right? I mean, you know, if it was the same, if I did the same exact thing for 30 years, you know, it's, I just don't know what I would do. So.
Would you give out your phone number one more time, Chris, before we start wrapping up today?
Yeah, of course. My phone number is 303-989-5282.
Okay. Yep. And you also have a wonderful assistant that works with you.
I was going to say, yeah, if you call, you'll probably talk to Gianna. She actually she runs the show here.
Oh, my gosh. She is so fun to talk with.
Yeah, she keeps me in line, so she'll probably talk to her and I think it's just to help those that need help. So if anyone has questions, I mean, this is fun stuff. So I'll always point you in the right direction.
I'm so glad that we had you here today. There were so many questions that came in from people, which actually was kind of, you know, heartwarming to see that people really are thinking about these things from ages 18 to 70 and how important, you know, different aspects of a person's life is in between those ages as well.
Yeah.
They think about all the changes that are coming and what that might mean for them.
Yeah. I agree. Job security, like I said.
I want to let the listeners know that next week on the show is going to be Sanford Shapiro. A lot of people know Sanford. He's somebody that I actually lived close to when I was in California. I lived in Pacific Grove, and he lived in Carmel. He's in the education industry. He specializes and has specialized in working with kids who have dyslexia. And then unbeknownst to both of us, we moved to Bend, Oregon. And Sanford actually started the Bend Learning Center there. And I was doing ed consulting, and we found out we were both in Bend, Oregon. And so we were able to reconnect. And he now is... I don't know, we laugh about the word retirement because he retired to Ecuador, but I see him working all the time. So it's kind of trying to figure out what retirement really is, I guess, for you. But he's written two books. One is called A Light Within. And then the second book, which just came out, is A Light Within, My Dyslexia, An Adventure Tale. And these are beautifully illustrated as well for kids. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit, talk about how it is to be living in Ecuador, talk about what it's like to semi-retire and just catch up with what he and Debbie, his wife, have been doing since they moved to this beautiful city there. And as I like to do every week, I want to just leave you all with a little thought. Today it's when feeling stuck or disconnected from the miracle of life, which does happen to all of us, listen, see, feel, and just take it in. Just take in the energies of life and remember that everybody's important. Every voice matters. I really am so blessed and honored with the guests that we have scheduled. We're scheduling into September now for people to be on the show. So many different interests. And I just want to thank everyone for coming in and being here each week and spending time, and especially today learning with Chris. I have a whole bunch of new questions. You'll be hearing from me soon. I want to thank you, everyone, for being here. Really appreciate everyone's time and look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks, Chris, for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Dory. Anytime.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dory Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.